You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with me, your host, Jo Britton. Your mojo is your energy, your enthusiasm, and your motivation so that you've got the ability to get results for your personal and professional life without freaking out and burning out. Tune in for practical advice on how to find your mojo and keep it. This episode is for you if you think life can be a bit of a twat at times and you want to take back control. It's also about being selfish and being yourself in an unapologetic way. My guest today is the absolutely fabulous Carolyn Hobday, dubbed the Midlife Mistress. She's author of All the Twats I Met Along the Way and its upcoming sequel, which I've got the privilege of reading the manuscript of at the moment. It's amazing, Detwat Your Life, as well as the self-help book, Redefining Selfish, No Guilt, No Regrets. She's co-authored other international bestsellers, has a weekly radio slot, Menopause Monday and Hump Day with Hobday. And having lived a life of shame and blame, Carolyn now talks about twats in both senses of the word. On the one hand, tackling unhelpful mindsets and behaviours and people to enable you to live unapologetically you. And on the other hand, being an advocate for women's health with a particular specialism in the menopause and toxic relationships. She's had a high-flying corporate career in HR. She's a keen boxer, a weightlifter, a Latin ballroom dancer, a singer and a car enthusiast. She's absolutely awesome. We met on Instagram and you know when you just hit it off with somebody and it was like, Carolyn, please can we collaborate and will you come on Mojo Matters? Carolyn Hobday, you are a legend. Welcome to Mojo Matters.
Thank you very much. Thank you for a fabulous introduction. So, amazing. Thank you.
Well, let's start because honestly, you've achieved so much and I've read all your books. They're amazing. And I can't wait because we'll talk about it later, your latest book as well. But how have you got to this? Because you had this, I mean, I related so much to like some of your story, particularly your corporate career. You had such a high-flying corporate job. But could you share with us your story? Because I think so many women will relate to it.
Yeah, I think that my life was kind of a game of two halves, I would say. So I had like a fabulous corporate career and I'm very lucky to have had that. So I don't want to sit here and go, oh, like, I had a corporate career and it was all rubbish. You know, I did some amazing stuff. I worked with some huge organizations. I worked for some of the world's largest employers, some of the most well-known, recognizable brands, both in terms of the businesses themselves and some of the products that they made and sold. So I had a fantastic corporate career in HR. I ended up being a statutory board director in a couple of businesses. And it was great. And it afforded me, you know, some fantastic opportunities internationally. I met some amazing people. I traveled to some great places. You know, I developed in terms of, you know, my skills and my capabilities. And all of it is great. There's loads of really good bits about that. But kind of alongside that, my personal life was a total and utter car crash. So like I said, it was a real paradox in that I was sort of having this very successful corporate career, whereas in the background, yeah, pretty much every relationship I had was harmful or toxic in some way. And all of that was driven from a place of pretty much zero self-worth, which was set when I was very young, which is what often happens to people. You know, most of our beliefs about the world and about ourselves are set before the age of seven. And I think I was about the age of seven when, you know, there's a particular incident in my life that set that stall out for me where I just thought if I didn't essentially people please and sort of bend over backwards to do that, I would end up alone and unloved. And that really just set about in my personal life, the way that I behaved and that I tolerated a lot of things that I shouldn't. And inevitably it did impact in my corporate career because I worked relentlessly hard. So that drive for perfection, you know, constantly driving myself, and I didn't drive for that perfection in other people, but just in myself. And, you know, I pushed myself constantly. I pushed myself physically, emotionally, you know, academically, throughout my corporate career, because it was that constant need to sort of try and be good enough, but never feeling like I was. And then, you know, there was a lot that happened along the way, hence, you know, all the twats I met along the way, because there was a lot of that. But I suppose the real crux came in the middle of 2018. It was actually Friday, the 13th of July, and my entire world imploded. So I was being pushed out of a job that I loved and I was very good at, but I was being pushed out of that by a toxic boss and an organization. And, you know, because I'd been prepared to stand up to somebody who needed standing up to. And within 10 days of that, my partner of 3 years, we had a house together. We had we co-parented his three children. We had them 50% of the time. And he walked into the room and said, when our house sale goes through, because we were in the process of selling it and then looking for another house, this is over. You'll never see my kids again. You need to leave. And it kind of allowed me at that point to start telling people that actually the relationship had been abusive, had been severely emotionally abusive for the last 2 years. Wow. And so I was very frightened of him because he then became, well, he'd always had this terrible temper, but, you know, like became very angry, very difficult. And so I had to run. And so in the space of that 10 days, I'd lost my job. I lost my home. I lost my relationship. And I've essentially lost my family, my stepchildren, all in the space of 10 days. And everything that I thought I stood for, every piece of identity that I thought that I had, which had been my job, my home, my relationship, you know, all those things that we think make us look successful in the world, all vanished. And I had no idea who I was. And I had a brush with suicide, and I talk very openly about that in my books and in the other work that I do, because I think it's really important that we're honest about that and honest about our mental health, not least because I looked every bit like I was somebody that had everything. You know, I looked like I had it all. I looked like I had it all under control. But in actual fact, it had just been massively unraveling for a long time. And what that moment did was force me to look at who I was, what I stood for, and actually what I wanted out of the rest of my life.
I mean, you know, to go through what you've been through, I mean, you know, people have to read all the twats met along the way, because it's kind of not what you think, actually, is it, from the title? And then for your whole world to implode with all these big things that, I think, picking up on what you're saying, your identity, isn't it, is wrapped up in all of this, like, as in the successful corporate career woman, the mum to the kids, you know, the material things, excuse me, that you have around you, and suddenly all that's gone. How did you pick yourself up then? What were the defining moments? Because you talk about, you know, brushes with suicide, mental, you know, how did you get out of that hole? What happened next?
Do you know what? The main thing, and I talk about this, it's one of the sort of central points of the next book, like Detwat Your Life, because actually the thing that you realize more than anything else is about who you have around you. And, you know, and when I went through that experience, what happened is, you know, when you go through adversity, it's the people that step forward that you suddenly realize are the ones that are really there for you. Sometimes it's actually quite surprising the people that don't. Yeah. And a lot of what I look at in Detwat Your Life is about actually who you have around you, and actually consciously thinking about that and assembling that team of people. And I talk about it in the book as the top table team, because it's like assembling the board of your life, and making sure you look at who that is and who you have around you and who you can really rely on and who you trust. And it was the people around me that just hugely made the difference, because the thing that I realized is that I thought I had no value. I thought my life was pointless. I thought I was worthless. And I'd thought that for a very long time. You know, this was sort of four decades in the making of that worthlessness. And the really defining thing for me, I think, was people that step forward. And it might only ever be one person that steps forward for you. Now, it's not about the quantity of people, it's about the quality of the people. But the people that stepped forward were smart, kind, thoughtful, you know, intelligent, you know, really good people. And I suddenly had that moment that I realized, hang on a minute, if I just turn around to them and go, like, I'm not worth it, then I'm telling these really smart, kind, intelligent people that they're stupid. And none of them were stupid, because they were all wonderful people in their own way, and they brought different things to the table in terms of my support and my recovery. But I think what it was actually realizing that they think I have value. They think I'm worth stepping forward for. They think I'm worth helping. And suddenly I realized that I had value and I had worth. And there was one of those friends in particular, actually, who a little bit beyond that, you know, we would spend some time with each other. And she was a lady, a more mature lady who lives by herself. And she said to me the one day, we went out somewhere, and she massively helped me during this period of time with really good, honest, straightforward sort of counsel. And she was one of a number of people. But what really stuck with me is that the one day I'd spent some time with her, and afterwards I sent her a text message and I said, thank you so much for your time. I really value the time that you spend with me. And she messaged back and said, but you're not understanding how much value you bring to me. And it was that sort of realization of, these people think I'm worth saving. They think I'm worth helping, and therefore I must have value. And it made me start to look inside myself and see what that value was.
Yeah, because I think in those situations, I mean, that was one of the, and this is why I relate so much to your work, because when you read Carolyn's books, you're very practical with step-by-step actions people can take, and actually it gets quite deep as well. And this was kind of when I went through my own sort of like personal crap, like pandemic meltdown, I would say, is the kind of nice way to like to say it. There's so many similarities in terms of the things that we've both done, and for me it was the same thing. So having an inner circle that kind of get you, don't they, you know, they kind of get you, and that might be for different reasons. For me at the time, it was because my business had taken a massive tumble. So I'd left my corporate job. I'd had a year with my business. It was doing really well. And it literally went with the pandemic. Mine was like, it was March 2020. And I was in a really, really bad place. And, you know, some well-meaning people were saying, oh, you just need to think positive, don't you? And it's like, you know, I'm trying, but when you can't get out of bed, and bed only feels like it's the safe place, and you don't want to get up and you don't want to open your eyes because you've got to face everything, that's really hard to do. And we're not wired to be positive, right? However, what did help me was just going to find and connect with some of these people I didn't even know. They were total strangers, but we're kind of optimistic, I would say, or we're really helpful, or would give a lot as well, you know. So they would just be willing to have conversations, no blame, no shame, no judgment. And I found those in like the most surprising places.
Yeah.
But it did mean, and this is the thing I think a lot of especially women find very challenging, because for me at the time I thought, I've got to help myself, but that felt very selfish. So it felt very selfish that there's a global pandemic on and people are so much worse than me. Why am I, you know, I've got a roof over my head, right? I've got access to food and water. Things aren't that bad for me. but I can't get out of bed. I'm having panic attacks and I'm anxious and I feel like a complete failure. And here I'd had a successful corporate career and a good first year in business. And now it was like, you know, the world was over. But it was, and I have a phrase, and I think you have a similar one actually when I read your books. It's you've got to put your own oxygen mask on first, right? Yeah. That can feel very, it sounds very good, but for many women, it can feel very like selfish to do. Mm. But you have to do it because you can't be there for other people or do the things that you want to do, right? So this is, you talk about redefining selfish, don't you? You have a book on that. It's a really great practical book that people should read. Tell us a bit more about that. How did you start to work through that? So you've got a good supportive network around you. And then what did you do? How did you position like this need to put your own oxygen mask on?
Yeah, and it's exactly what you say. And I talk about it in terms of like your life vest, but it's the same, like you say, it's the same analogy because, you know, if you're drowning, you can't help anyone. And, you know, that's sort of men, women and children, you know, you can't help anyone if you're drowning yourself. And I think that was my realization is that I'd spent all this time sort of giving out to everybody else. So, to whoever it was, whether it was at work or at home, you know, I used to prioritize everybody first over and above myself. Mm-hmm. And you end up sort of burnt out and you end up burnt out. You might end up emotionally burnt out, physically burnt out. You end up irritable, really. Mm-hmm. You're just weary with the world. You feel downtrodden, devalued, all this stuff. And how can you possibly sort of serve others from a place of love and care? And bearing in mind, I worked in HR, and HR is an incredibly difficult profession. You know, it isn't sort of all tea and tissues and toilets, you know, and there is lots of that. But sometimes those things come about in the most horrific of some circumstances. You know, you're dealing with the best and the worst of the human condition, and quite often you're not able to tell people about it because a lot of what you're dealing with is confidential to the individual that you're working with. But I end up just sort of giving all the time. I gave all of myself all of the time, and you know, yes, I had sort of hobbies and things that I did, but I always felt guilty for those. Mm. I used to try and fit them around everything else, and certainly the sort of toxic relationship I'd been in, you know, he made it incredibly difficult for me to maintain doing those things. You know, it made me feel really bad for, you know, going to choir once a week and, you know, coming home really late, you know, and it's like, but every other day of the week, I'm, you know, giving every, and I was getting up, you know, really early in the morning to, you know, wash and iron and do whatever else for essentially what were his children. So in terms of redefining selfish, I think I just sat there and thought, there has to be a different way of thinking about this. You know, there needs to be a different way that we consider what selfish means, because actually selfish is just about taking care of yourself and seeing that it's okay to prioritize you, because if you want to look after all of these other people, then you actually have to be in a really good place yourself. You know, your battery needs to be topped up, your life vest needs to be on so that you're not drowning. Like you say, you need to have enough oxygen, you know, going into your body so that you're fighting fit. That's the best way to look after, support all of these other people, but that has got to start with you. And also as well, I think as women, you know, it's in particular, like you say, it is also that thing of, we sort of have this thing where we think it's okay to then sort of teach both boys and girls, you know, anybody that we're a role model for, whether that's at work, whether it's at home, but we think it's kind of okay to teach others that it's okay for us to be at the bottom of the heap. And it's like, for anybody, you know, I would say that particularly has a daughter, you know, are you really wanting to set her life expectations up that she always has to put herself last? I think the same for boys. You know, there's been big conversations in more recent times, you know, on the back of the, you know, the tragic case of, you know, the death of Sarah Everard and all of the things that come out, you know, beyond that. And, you know, that she's not been the only case, sadly, recently. But, you know, where we have started to have this conversation where we need to raise our men differently as well. And again, as women, as mothers, if we're there going, yeah, we're just the bottom of the heap. And I think Terry Hatcher, years ago, the actress, she had this thing about, you know, like don't, you know, about eating the burnt toast, you know, because a lot of mothers, you know, you'll make the toast, you'll burn the toast, you'll go, oh, it's okay, I'll have the burnt toast.
Yeah.
And you know, and actually it's what that's teaching our children or anybody around us about how important we are or not, as the case may be. And I heard that years ago and it sort of really sat with me, but that's really the attitude that I'm talking about. And quite often we have to understand, and I learned this particularly, I have to say, as being a leader of people in organizations, is that even when you think they're not looking, people are looking at you and what you do and how you behave, and they will, you know, they will copy that for good or for bad, but they will. And if you get away with something or you let somebody else get away with something in relation to you, others will either treat you that way or go off and treat other people that way. And I think I just really realized that we have to stand and sort of take a look at ourselves from the outside and see ourselves as other people see us. And if we're there going, I'm not worthy of this, you know, I'm not worthy of looking after myself, you know, I'm always at the bottom of my list, you know, I never give myself any time, I don't think my health matters, I don't think the way people treat me matters, you know, we're actually just raising the next generation of both boys and girls, I think, to go, well, yeah, I don't matter. And I think we need to raise women to raise the standard about how they should be treated. And we need to raise men to raise the standard of how they think women should be treated. And that will make for a better society. So for me, it's actually about a much, much greater good that all of us can role model in society.
Yeah. And because I work with a lot of clients, men and women, but a lot of my clients are women, what, midlife, shall we say, midlife. And suddenly wake up one day, maybe not one day, it goes on for a few years before that. The kids are growing up a bit, but was totally exacerbated during lockdown. This is how I ended up doing what I was doing too. Feeling like they're failing as a parent, as a partner, as a professional, the whole everything else comes first, but also wanting to do the best for like their kids, and particularly like a lot of my clients will talk about like their daughters and like how they want to help them, yet struggle to put themselves first, because as you say, a lot of the stuff that we carry with us into our relationships, into our jobs, into businesses, if we have them, are those beliefs that we formed when we were really young, those experiences that we've had, that quite frankly, you know, life can be a twat. That's why, you know, that's why I love, like, I just love how candidly you talk and how you, you know, you name your books, like, around this. It's very, very difficult, I think, for a lot of women to, and men actually, well, I'll say this, like you say, it's not, I mean, so I'm hoping, even though like we're talking as women on this, I know I have a lot of men who listen to Mojo Matters, and I hope they've not gone, oh, this is for like women of midlife or whatever, and I hope that they listen to this too for themselves, but also if they've got kids and like to raise that too, and also so that we can understand each other better, like as men and women. But where would you suggest somebody start? So they may not have had the huge kind of collision, life collision that you've had, or like the big upset that I had, but are maybe just feeling in this place where they're feeling unfulfilled, but by being feeling that way, feel that, oh my gosh, that's guilty. They feel guilty about that as well, because I've got a lovely family, you know, I've got a job, I've got a lovely family, I get to do stuff, but yet still inside them, they feel like they're built for bigger stuff, and they want to do something, but they just don't know where to start. What would you suggest?
I think that you can't know where you're going unless you know where you're starting from. So my start point, and, you know, and I touch on this a little bit in Redefining Selfish, and I guess to put the books in context, whilst the Twat books are sort of my Twat trilogy, so De-Twat Your Life, that's about to come out, is the second book of the trilogy. Redefining Selfish is almost a little bit like the warm-up to De-Twat Your Life. It's the kind of dip your toe in the water, which is why if somebody's a bit nervous about, okay, so where do I start, I would say like Redefining Selfish, that book, start there, because that's a little bit of an ease in, whereas DTWAT is like you say, it's a deeper dive into the steps that you might want to take. However, it is about, in the first instance, sort of understand yourself as you are right now, because unless you do that and unless you take that time and unless you are prepared to be honest, and you know, and thank you for mentioning the fact that, you know, I do try to be searingly honest in my writing, not least because I think we just so often, like, you know, put this veneer on, and I think social media, as we know, is terrible for helping us to show the best side of ourselves. And actually, you know, when I wrote all the twats I met along the way, and you know, I'm really honest and say I am one of those twats, you know, there's several times in the book when I am that twat, and when I write D-twat, actually sometimes we have to stop being the twat to ourselves, you know. That's the place to start. But I think the main place to start is to say you need to know where you are right now. So, you know, one of the key exercises that I look at in that sense of awareness is about understanding, as you say, you know, what are those stories that I tell myself about myself, and where do they come from? Because for me, I had to understand that my sense of lack of self-worth came from an incident when I was 7. And somebody said, look, if you don't learn to be nicer, then, you know, you'll end up on your own and nobody will love you. And I didn't even realize, you know, I totally took that on. And, you know, I was a child, it was said to me by an adult, and I totally took that on. That became my identity for the next 40 years, because that's the story I kept telling myself. And when my life imploded and I had the opportunity to then sort of unravel the tape and sort of see, you know, how I'd got there, which is what it forced me to do, realize that it's because I've been telling myself this story all my life about how I was totally unlovable and was going to end up on my own. So all of my sort of life decisions have been based around trying to for that not to happen. But what it ended up doing was exactly that, because in an effort to be lovable and bending over backwards and, you know, bending myself out of shape to please everybody, I just drove people away. So it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I would say that you need to understand where you are. So look at the stories that you tell yourself. How did they originate? Are they actually true? Did the person who maybe said that to you, you know, might have been at school, it might be a partner, whatever, are they qualified to make that assessment about you? And that even goes for if maybe it came from your parents, you know, because our parents, you know, are fallible and, you know, have their own history and their own background and their own worry that they translate onto us. So, you know, it's not about saying, oh, they know nothing, but actually really examine, is this stuff about me true? Where is it coming from? Where does that belief come from? And be prepared to challenge it. And then beyond that, you know, one of the other exercises that particularly I get people to look at in redefining selfish, and I pick up again in DTWAT Your Life, is about looking at the labels, because I just become all the labels that I had. So, you know, I was partner, I was boss, I was daughter, I was step-parent, you know, and beyond that, I totally lost who I was when I set all of those labels to one side. So that's another good exercise to do, is actually write down all of those labels that you know. So whether, you know, like you say, you're a parent or a wife or a husband or whatever it is, write all of those labels down, but then write down some things about yourself that have got nothing to do with those labels. Like, who are you? And start to reconnect with that. And go, this is who I am at my core, and my identity isn't dependent upon those labels.
Yeah.
And those labels can be good and great. I mean, you know, some of them I love and I value. You know, my parents are still alive and I count myself massively lucky for that. And I'm, as you know, a daughter to them, and I'll always be, you know, their daughter. But, you know, some of those labels are great, but I needed to understand who I was without them. And what I stood for, because once you know what you stand for, that little patch of ground, you know, and I talk about, you know, declaring that little patch of land that you stand on and standing tall on that patch of land and going, this is who I am. And now I can stand tall. I can hold my head up. I can put my shoulders back and down. I know who I am. Right. Okay. Now I can tackle what's in front of me in the world.
Yeah. And what's important to me. So a big thing, I did as part of that was just really reflect on and identify my values and what matters most to me. Yeah. And it all sounds a little bit you know, for some people, but oh, it's a bit woo-woo, all of that. But actually, that's at the heart of your life, isn't it? So I know that when I live and act with my values, then I have more positive experiences and emotions in my life. Whereas when I go against them, that's when I get like really frustrated or angry or anxious or overwhelmed, or I feel like I'm swimming through treacle. And partly, you know, decisions for me about what I did next with my life came about because actually the environment I was in at the time, there was a big clash with my personal values. So no matter what I did to try and self-regulate, to be calmer, or for me, it was like, I'll keep working and working and prove myself. And, it'll be, you know, it, at the heart of it, there was a clash with my values. And so I was never going to be happy. And I think you talk about in your second book about the difference, really. There is a difference between like this, like happiness, which is kind of like it fleets from day to day, doesn't it, a little bit? But this whole feeling of fulfillment that you can, when you feel fulfilled, sustain, and therefore your life is happier and you're healthier.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that that's the difference. You know, we try and pursue happiness, but happiness is very transient.
Yeah.
Like any emotions are transient. And we, I think we tend to think, oh, I need to sort of get happiness and hang on to it. But we, none of us can, you know, even day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute, you know, depending on what's going on. And not least these days with like the kind of feed of social media, you know, our emotions get impacted, you know, almost minute to minute, and can fluctuate. So you know, whilst happiness in itself is important and it's great to be happy, and I would class myself as, you know, a glass half full kind of woman, but you know, happiness comes and goes as any emotion does, you know. And again, one of my other favorite sayings is that emotions are just emotions, they're not facts, because they just come and go. And, you know, if we can recognize that, but you're right, fulfillment is something very different. Fulfillment is about saying, what do I stand for? What's my legacy in this life? You know, what is it that I'm going to leave behind? And that comes in many forms, you know. And again, people sit there and think, well, it's just like little me, like, how am I going to leave a legacy? You know, I'm not Steve Jobs, or, you know, I'm not Oprah Winfrey or whatever. It's like, you don't need to be any of those things. You can go and be, well, you know, obviously don't ever go and be any of those people because they already exist, but, you know, but go and be something amazing and huge in the world. But actually understand that in your world, you can still be huge, because that's the impact you have on other people. The biggest legacy that we leave anywhere in our lives is our impact on other people. Yeah. And it's really about understanding, like you said, it's about those values, and it's about what's the legacy you want to leave behind. And that legacy isn't just about when you're no longer on this planet. That legacy is, I've had an interaction with this person. How do I want to leave them feeling? And always try and leave people feeling better than when you arrived. And sometimes that isn't just about being nice to everybody. That isn't about the world being all kind of Pollyanna and, again, like happy all of the time. Because sometimes those interactions are things that we have to say that are quite difficult. But actually, if you're the person that's prepared to say that difficult thing that needs to be said to somebody else, but you do that with respect, you do it with dignity, you do it with kindness, you know, you do it with good intention, then actually the legacy that you're going to leave on that person is a positive one. They might sting a little bit in terms of like you've told them a bit of a home truth that they needed to hear. But actually, the fact that you've bothered to do that and you've done it with kindness and respect, they'll go, do you know what, that actually really helped me, and it came from a place of good intent and kindness and respect. So I just think that, you know, legacy has, you know, can be of any kind of magnitude that you want it to be. You know, it can just be the legacy you leave on your children. It can be a legacy that you leave on the person that you meet in the coffee bar this morning and they go, oh, I, you know, that was a good interaction. But you're right, that sense of those values is really important, because if we live in line with those values and we define what it is that we want, what is the legacy we want to leave ultimately in our lives, then that's your sense of fulfillment. That's the thing that gets you up in the morning. That's the thing that drives you. And if you go after that fulfillment and, you know, and have that sort of, you know, again, people talk about, you know, your compass, your true north, your, you know, what it is that you want to get out of life, and the imprint that you want to leave behind. That's far more achievable and more satisfying than trying to be happy, you know, because we can be happy by watching a cat video online. You know, we could be happy because we let ourselves have a gin and tonic at the end of a tough day, but those things just, they just don't last, do they? They just, you know, and it's gone in the moment. But fulfillment is about going, I feel like I have purpose. I feel like my life has meaning. And actually, meaning is what gives us a great life.
It is, it is. And you've reminded me, and I think you do a similar exercise as well. And it's about awareness as well. When you're feeling not in the best space, maybe you're feeling a bit guilty about, I should be doing this, or I want to do that, but I shouldn't do it. And I do remind myself about, so what matters to me? What's important? What is my legacy? And I imagine, because it was a big one for me, thinking leaving my corporate job behind, I'm looking at my, it sounds morbid, my gravestone. What do I want it to say on there? Well, it's not going to say, like, you know, Joe worked for this company and she was a number on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, and that's your legacy. That's a part of legacy, isn't it? You know, like, actually what, and you're totally right. You don't have to be this person that, you know, is the person that changes the world. So like for me, mine at the moment is, can I just help one person every single day and maybe change the world by changing one person's brain at a time, like through the work that I do, and help them just live a better life, right? And do the things that they're really capable of doing, but the voices get in the way, and, you know, like the meanings we attach to things and words. And also what you were saying earlier about, you know, people will often have said things to you, especially when you're really young. Could have been a fleeting comment that you took on that they don't even remember saying or would not even think twice about, but you took on that as a belief that you've navigated your world and your life. Like you said, you carried yours for decades or whatever. I've carried many of those. And you suddenly sit there and you go, how true is that? Actually, it's not. Our brain, it just, it believes whatever we tell it. It's, you know, it likes all the fiction and the stories, because those sorts of things, they're designed to keep us safe, aren't they? You know,
absolutely. And we look for evidence to support them, because we don't like to challenge them. Yeah. So that's part of, you know, what I talk about in the book is that, you know, you have to be prepared to challenge those stories, because mostly we're like always looking for evidence to support the fact that we're right, because we don't want to tell ourselves that we're not right. Yeah. But you know, I love your thing about the headstone thing, because again, you're right, I talk about it in the book. And I get people to do an exercise that's all about writing their eulogy. It's like, you know, okay, so this is your funeral. It doesn't sort of matter, you know, how you've died or when in your life or whatever. None of that's important. But actually, what do you want to be said about you? Yeah. And you know what? What really brought it home to me is that back a couple of years ago, my step-gran, actually, she passed away, and she was 90 years old. And very much like me, she couldn't have children, so she didn't have children. But she'd married my grandfather, and therefore, you know, my mum and her brother were her stepchildren. And then later on, after my grandfather passed away, she actually married again and had further stepchildren. And the impact that she's had, like, not just on our lives, but on lots of other lives. And interestingly, you know, I was always also inspired in my career, because she was an HR director. And she was an HR director back in the day when it was particularly difficult for women to get senior roles. And I remember her telling me sort of stories about that and what that was like for her in that time. But you know what? I stood at her funeral, and actually there were two eulogies at her funeral. Two people stood up and spoke about her. And it was that realization of thinking, oh my word, if I could have just a tenth of what has just been said about her, said about me and my life, because, you know, even though she was, you know, she, again, had, like me, was not going to get to leave a legacy of children. But my God, that hadn't stopped her impacting a whole bunch of lives in terms of what she did, you know, what she achieved, how she behaved, you know, funny stories, you know, all sorts of stuff that she'd done. And so I think it is so powerful that actually there's no point waiting until that point, is there, to sort of go, oh, this is what you know, I'm hoping this gets said about me when I die. You think we can impact that now. We can't control, mostly, like, we can't control when we leave this earth, but my God, we can control what we do whilst we're here. And we can, if we define what we want that eulogy to say, the kind of things that, you know, we want people to be saying about us at our funeral or in that eulogy, we can start impacting that now. And I know the kinds of things that I want to people to be standing around saying about me at that point. And I want to live a life that gives me the best possible chance of people saying that stuff. Because you're right, nobody's going to go, do you know what? She earned like a lot of money through payroll, or, you know, she got a big bonus every year. Nobody's going to say that. Nobody's going to be talking about, you know, what car I drove or what house I lived in or whatever. They're going to say things about who you were and the impact that you had on them. And we have the opportunity every single day to have a positive impact on other people in the way we treat them. And I'm not saying that I universally get it right all the time. I'm not. But that thinking goes around with me everywhere. For me, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, the person standing next to you in a queue, or the person serving you in a restaurant, or your best friend, or it doesn't matter. For me, I just always try and have in the front of my mind, how am I leaving that person? How are they feeling on the back of that interaction with me? And like I said, I don't always get it right. You know, we do all have bad days, don't we? We're a bit grumpy and we just sort of, you know, snatch the coffee from the barista and rush off. But, you know, I do try and think really hard, you know, about, and I think it's, sometimes I think it's as simple as a smile. I really do.
Lovely, lovely. So to wrap up, I think, you know, the latest book, you're going to tell us in a minute when it's out and how people can get a copy, but it's kind of about, you know, people find it, actually, I think, find it really difficult to discover who they are, because they've had these, you know, you call it labels. I'd also call it, we have different statuses throughout life or every day. Yeah, when you're the mum, or you're the boss, or you're the wife, or but you're a customer in a shop, you know, we've got all these different label statuses, and so then we take a lot of stuff on, we hear a lot of things, like, and we think a lot of, oh, I should do that, or it's you know, I've been told I ought to do this, and then we kind of say, let's, you know, just like, be you. A lot of people will say, you know, here's some advice, be you. Who is that person, and how do I be me and feel all right about being me? This is quite a theme, isn't it, for the new book that's coming out? Yeah. So briefly tell us about that, what people will get from that book, and when it's out and how they can get it.
Yeah. So basically, Detwat Your Life is really about simple steps to being unapologetically you. So it's about understanding who you are, where you're going, starting from, where you want to get to, and actually defining what the life is that you want, what that legacy is that you want to leave, what you want to have stood for the time you have left on this planet. And like you say, you know, there's a lot of people in midlife, whether it's men or women, but we reach that point where it's like, I mean, I don't know about you, but I sort of hit that point where I thought, oh my God, I've got another 20 or 25 years of work in this job. And it's like, oh, like, I just really don't know if I want that. So it's really a step-by-step process of understanding who you are and how to start being unapologetically you. So knowing what you stand for, but also making some decisions about who it is that you're going to allow in your life and who you're not. So getting rid of the toxic people, getting rid of the toxic thoughts for yourself, and making sure that you surround yourself both in your head, because I think that's one of the most important places that we need to challenge ourselves, is inside our own heads. You know, we never speak to anyone as much as we speak to ourselves. So if we tackle that mindset inside of ourselves, then that also projects outwards in terms of how we deal with other people and what we're prepared to tolerate. So there's four sort of stages to detwat your life. So they're known as the self steps. So there's 12 steps, but they come in four stages. And the first one is seeking, so self-seeking. So that's all about understanding who you are, where you are right now, and sort of what you want to focus on. Then there's self-expression, and that's all about sort of how you communicate and, you know, how you sort of stand for, you know, what you stand for and how you stand for it. Then there is self-love. So that's all about sort of care, compassion, both for yourself and for others. And then the final one that we talked about is about fulfillment. So it's like, actually, what goals am I then going to set myself? So we don't set, you know, real sort of goals and targets and intentions, you know, until we've done a lot of that self-discovery stuff. So that's the four stages of the self steps. So that's what the book is all about. So it's about a voyage of discovery with yourself, but really breaking that down. So it's really step by step rather than like, oh, I'm feeling like completely overwhelmed.
Yeah, what do I do with this now, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's really about very practical. Practical exercises. So there's stories in there from my life, you know, there's reasons why each step is there from based on my own experience and my own voyage of discovery. But then it's like, here's practical stuff that you can do. And I try and make those steps as easy as possible and as break them down as much as possible.
Because I don't know about you, but it's, I think that's really helpful, the way that you've put it in steps, because actually, through my own process of discovery, it doesn't go in a straight line, or my experience. So you navigate, you go in a straight line, and then you dip round a corner, and then you drop down again. And so actually, to be able to take, is that the same for you? And then you've been able to go, okay, so if I knew all of that at the start, and I told somebody else, it would be A, B, C, D.
Yeah, definitely. And I do talk about it in the book. You know, it's a little bit like if you're sailing a boat, you know, you might have to tack backwards and forwards a little bit, because it's really hard to go do this, then do that, then do that. Inevitably, you'll learn stuff during the steps, and it might make you go back a little bit and go, oh, I'm actually going to
iterate things, and you use that learning. And
use the learning as you go, but as best as possible. Because when my world fell in, I had not a Scooby-Doo what to do, and it was just, I was floundering around, I made mistakes, whatever. And that's the point of the book, of going, I made all of these mistakes, but I learned some stuff. And actually, if I give you the how-to process, the only thing that you then need to do is to then do the process, because you no longer have to work the process out, because I've given it to you. So it's the kind of how-to of to sort of, you know, navigate your life and set yourself on a course that you want. So those are the, you know, those are the self steps. The book is launching on the 22nd of May. So we're going to have quite a build up and some PR and promo around it. And when it's out, it'll be out in all the usual places. So you can get it on my website, which is carolynhobday.com, and you'll be able to order it in advance from there as well. But it'll be on Amazon and Waterstones, you know, all the usual online booksellers.
Okay. So your website is the best place for people to come and find you and connect with you.
It is, yeah, because I talk on there about the courses that I run. I talk about sort of the, you know, the midlife stuff that I do. So that, like I said, whether that's sort of navigating where you want to go, or alternatively, you know, if there's a particular slant on the menopause or women's health, all of that's on the website.
Amazing. Carolyn, that has been, honestly, I can't believe that's almost an hour, actually. I could chat with you all day.
Talk all day.
Every day. It's been amazing. Thank you so much for, you speak really candidly about things. I think that's really important. You write so well. I really enjoy reading your books and taking action from them. Thank you ever so much for being an awesome guest on Mojo Matters.
Thank you for having me on. And I think actually the connection that we made, I think for me, proves that, you know, the points that we work to is that when you know who you are and you live to your values, it's amazing the people that you start to attract into your life. I'm massively blessed of the fact that we managed to connect, because I think it's about those shared value sets.
Thanks so much. You've been listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with Jo Britton. Tune in again for more practical advice on how to find your mojo and how to keep it.